we're going to talk about what God expects us to do in terms of personal evangelism, in terms of bearing fruit by bringing other people to know God. And one of the passages that we refer to a lot is John the 15th chapter, verses 1 through 12. This is Jesus talking with his disciples, his apostles at that point. And he explains some things that I think are really important. He says, I am the true vine. My Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes it so it will be even more fruitful. And we're going to talk about that whole process of pruning. And we'll talk about that. That'll be our last subject that we'll discuss. So as we begin to bear fruit for God, we have to expect him to prune us. And that's of course, a little bit difficult, because it seems like the better you do, the more you are expected to do. So we'll talk about that. He says, you are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you. Remain in me, and I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. That's important. The only way that we can bear any kind of fruit is if we stay attached to the vine. We're just a branch on the vine. We're not the vine. We can't ever take that place. And so we have to stay attached to the vine. And we'll further develop that in just a minute. He says, neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. Just as I kept my Father's commands and remain in his love, I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. And I find it really interesting that we look at this passage in particular to suggest that Christians need to reach other people to bring them into Christ. Now, I firmly believe that that's the case. We need to be reaching out to other people to bring them into Christ. But I don't think this particular discussion has anything to do with that. This particular discussion is Jesus saying, you, Eileen, stay attached to me and bear fruit, your fruit. And it's not that you branch off into somebody else. You don't. If they're gonna come to know God, they're gonna be a branch just like you are. So I think the emphasis here in John 15 is pretty clearly us keeping the commandments of God. Now, maybe you say that's a commandment of God. Okay, but it's no more a commandment of God than sharing, than all of the other, the contentment, all of the other things that we've talked about that are bearing fruit, doing violence to no man. I understand all of that, but I just think our emphasis here ought to be on what Jesus is talking about with his apostles. Okay? Comments, questions on this passage? So just kind of bear that in mind. I think this is a passage that we kind of abuse when we make this a passage that talks about bringing other people to Christ. I don't think that's his emphasis here. His emphasis here is you need to bear fruit. If that means you need to stop cussing, then stop cussing. If you need to stop gambling, stop gambling. Okay? But I think that's the point that he's making. Okay? Then the next one I want to look at is Mark the 16th chapter. Now let's see, I don't think I want to look at Mark 16 next. I think I want to look at, flip ahead a little bit. I got these out of order. Another passage we use is Matthew 28, 16 through 20. This is the Great Commission. Okay? And again, I think the emphasis in this passage is not so much on us bearing fruit, us converting other people, teaching the gospel. I absolutely agree. We have a responsibility to teach the gospel, and we'll get to that. But this passage is not directed at us. The 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee. Let's get this up. And I'm going to have to spring ahead here in my passages. There it is. Matthew 28, verses 16 through 20. The 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee to the mountain that Jesus had designated. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. This is up on the mountain. Jesus has been raised from the dead. This is shortly before he goes back to heaven. Okay? He spoke to them and he said, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." I think that's an important statement. He couldn't make that statement until he'd been crucified. Once he was crucified, that's the first time he says, "I have all authority." Okay? "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world." So this is a statement that, as I read it, is made to the 11 apostles. They haven't chosen Barnabas yet, but they are the 11 apostles. Judas has killed himself already, and he says, "I want you to go and teach all nations." Now, this is different than the limited commission. He'd already given the limited commission. He gave that to 70, and he sent them out two by two, and he said, "Go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." That was earlier. He said, "I want you to teach Israel." And we all know that the church started among the Jews. Okay? For the first 10 years, everybody that was a part of the church, all the baptized believers were Jews. That's what Jesus wanted. He wanted them to start in Jerusalem, then Judea, then Samaria, and then into the uttermost parts of the earth. And they did that.
Was it Matthias, the 12th, the other apostle, not Barnabas?
Barnabas, no. No, Matthias.
I thought,
yeah.
Did I forget something?
No, no, you're right, and thank you for correcting that. So he's talking to the 11 apostles, and he gives them this information. Now, why do I say that it's so important that we understand who this statement was made to? Because you can look at the parallel passage in Mark 16. So now go back in your outline. Sorry, I got that one out of spot where it was supposed to be. So now we'll go back and we'll look at Mark 16. This is the parallel statement to Matthew 28. And we quote verses 16 and 17 a lot. But I want you to see something very important. This is 16 and 17 are part of a conversation. So you can't take just a part of the conversation and not take the entirety of the conversation. Somebody want to read Mark 16, 14 through 18?
Maybe Jane.
Jane, do you have that? Okay.
There we are. So you want to go from 15 to
14 through 18.
14 through 18. And afterward, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at the table, and he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who had seen him after he had risen. And he said to them, go in to all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who have believed in my name. They will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will pick up serpents. And if they drink any deadly poison, it shall not hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover. So then, when the Lord Jesus had spoken to them, he was received up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of God. And they went out and preached everywhere, while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word by the signs that followed.
Okay. So again, I think this is a statement that's made to those 11 apostles. Okay? And most of those 11 apostles weren't ready to believe the reports of the people that had seen Jesus after he was raised. They were still doubting. And that's the emphasis that he lays on this. If you look at verse 14, he says, they were eating and Jesus is correcting their lack of faith. Okay? So their stubborn refusal to believe. These apostles were the ones who weren't believing. Okay, and then he says, go into all the world, preach the gospel. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whosoever believeth not will be condemned. Now he's giving them instructions. He says, go preach the gospel. That's what they were supposed to do. And then we kind of get in trouble because when you talk to Pentecostal folks, they say, these are signs that will accompany those that believe. Well, when he says these signs accompany those that believe, is he talking about the apostles who were supposed to believe, and he's talking about their unbelief, or is he talking about the ones who believe and are baptized?
I just thought it was the ones that believed when the 11 finally went and did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
So, but we can't do these things.
Yeah, we can't do those things. And I think it's a mistake to say that was a promise that Jesus made to everybody that heard the apostles preach and believed. This was a statement that was made to the apostles. And he said, do this. Go and preach. If you believe, go preach. Okay? I think we get into trouble when we take verses 15 and 16 and we say, that applies to us. Because we're taking the middle part of a conversation and ignoring the beginning and end of the conversation and picking out the Great Commission, saying that applies to us. The Great Commission wasn't given to us. It was given to the apostles.
That makes sense.
Okay? Now, I think we still have this responsibility, but it's just not there. That's not where we establish it. And it's really important when we talk about biblical information that we're very careful that we don't take something, we don't pick out a statement that we want and use that and ignore the rest of it. And it does bother me that we do that. And I try not to do that. I try very, very, I try really hard not to do that. I know sometimes I do anyway, but that's something that I really try hard not to do. Comments? Questions? So see, this doesn't create a problem for me saying that I can't pick up snakes like the apostles could, because that promise was never given to me.
Right.
That promise was given to the apostles.
Right.
If they would believe and go do this, okay, I don't think it's given to me as a believer. I think it was given to the apostles.
And the apostles were directly talking to those people. I realize what's written is talking to us, but they were directly talking to those people then. So
yeah.
It wouldn't apply to us now.
Yeah, it just doesn't. This is a statement that was made to the apostles. And you can't take it out of context. Okay? So, now we know that from what Jane read, the conclusion of Matthew's or Mark 16, that they went and did this. Okay? And I will just mention, if you are reading some of the newer translations, this section of Mark 16 is omitted.
Really?
Yeah. It's not in some of the manuscripts that we have discovered most recently. And so if you're reading this in the NIV, that's why in the NIV this is in italics, because there's some question about whether the end of Mark 16 was in the original manuscript or whether it was added. And you can see why it would have been added, because it's just like Matthew 28. So it makes sense that they would add it, or just kind of use this occasion to comment on Matthew 28. I tend to think that the fact that it's not in some of the newer manuscripts is probably evidence that it was taken out more than it was evidence that it was never included. Okay? So,
it's in here, isn't it? In the American Standard?
It's in the American Standard.
New King James.
Look and see. Yeah. I didn't look at the New King James.
I got too much stuff. Okay, that's about 15:14:80.
It's in
the New King James.
Okay.
Yeah.
The New King James is based on the same manuscript evidence that the Old King James was based on. And the reason that it's the New King James is they tried to update the language a little
bit. Right, yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some of the newer translations don't have it in there.
Huh.
And some put it in, but they put it in italics. Is it in italics?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just like in my Bible, whatever Jesus said is in red.
Okay.
So and it's all there.
You know that anything that's in italics is a word that the translators supplied.
Right.
It's not in the original manuscripts.
Right.
So a lot of people have tried to deal with the end of this section 17 and 18 by saying it's not in the original. Okay. Well, that's not being honest because the whole thing is not in the original. Mm-hmm. And so that's not a way to get around this. That's not a way to deal with the idea that there's this promise that you can take up snakes. And we're familiar with this. When the Apostle Paul was on the island, and remember, they built a fire, and a snake came out of the fire and bit him on the hand, and he didn't suffer any ill effects. They thought he was a god. Okay? So this was absolutely true. There are people today.
Well, we've watched it on TV, not for a long, long time, but seen, and they are handling the snakes, and they're doing all this stuff. And
yeah. I read the funniest story about somebody. He was a country singer, and he was invited to sing. He was a religious person. He was invited to sing at a Pentecostal meeting. And before the song was finished, somebody ran up on the stage and grabbed a snake and started dancing around with it and all of this. And somebody behind this singer looked at him and said, "Is there a back door anywhere?" He said, "No, but I'm about to ask them where they'd like to have one." So, I just think that's a funny story. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
And a lot of people that do this snake handling stuff, they come from my part of the country. You know, it's Appalachia and Pentecostals and a lot of these folks grab those rattlesnakes and they get bit and they die.
Yeah. Rick went to Pentecostal church a few times with one of his friends when they were in high school. And he said it was, I don't think they had snakes, but he said it was really something.
Yeah, I went to a Pentecostal tent meeting one time. And I shouldn't have done that. I was just going to make fun of them. I wasn't interested in what they had to say. I didn't care what they had to say. I just went to make fun of them. And that's my fault. I shouldn't have done that. But I remember this one woman, she said, "I got the Spirit." And the preacher walked over to her and said, "Have you got the Spirit?" And she said, "Yes, I've got the Spirit." And he put his hand on her forehead and he goes, bam, like that. And I mean, he cold cocked her. She went down like a light. And he said, brethren, the Spirit's got her. Me and my friend are sitting in the back, and it's like, no, the Spirit didn't get her. You knocked her out.
Exactly.
Okay, that.
I know.
I was there to make fun, and that's all I was doing, and I shouldn't have been doing it, but that's what I was doing. So this passage doesn't give me any trouble, because this passage, in my mind, is a statement that's made to the 11. He's chastising them because they don't believe. It's the 11 that don't believe.
Right.
And he says, now when you believe, go do this. And if you believe, then these things will happen. But the believers were the among the 11.
So when he says, and these signs will accompany those who believe, it's them. It's not whoever they're talking to at that time.
Yeah.
It's the apostles. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't have any trouble with this, because in my mind, this is a statement that's made to the apostles. The whole thing is made to the apostles. It's not made to me. So I don't read this and say, okay, God said for me to go into all the world. He didn't. He told the apostles to do it. So let's keep going in the life of the apostles. And let's look at Romans 1, 8 through 13. So this is Paul. He's writing to the Romans. And he's explaining some things to the Romans about why he wants to come and see them. Part of it was he wanted them to refresh him. Okay? He wanted to get some benefit from them. The other reason that he wanted to come was because he wanted to have some fruit among them, as he had in other places as he had journeyed along. Now, he had gone to the Gentiles. This is late enough that Paul is basically the apostle to the Gentiles. Okay? And can somebody read Romans 1, 8 through 13? Let's get, let's see. You have it, Lenny?
First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, because your faith is being proclaimed throughout the whole world. For God, whom I serve in my spirit in the preaching of the gospel of his Son, is my witness as to how unceasingly I make mention of you. Always in my prayers, making requests, if perhaps now at last by the will of God I may succeed in coming to you. For I long to see you, so that I may impart some spiritual gift to you, that you may be established. That is, that I might be encouraged together with you while among you, each of us by the other's faith, both yours and mine. I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I often had planned come to you, and have been prevented so far, so that I may obtain some fruit among you also, even as among the rest of the Gentiles.
Okay. So Paul is talking about bearing fruit among them. And who's he writing to?
The people there.
Yeah. He's writing to the Roman Christians. And he says, there's going to be an exchange of encouragement here. I want you to encourage me, and I want to encourage you. I want to have some fruit among you, just like I have among the rest of the Gentile world. Okay? Now, the church in Rome is made up probably, well, I don't know, I shouldn't say, but it's largely Gentile, but a lot of Jews are with them. Okay? So, Paul wants to go to Rome so he can have some fruit among the Romans. He's not talking about going and preaching the gospel to people that don't know. The fruit he's talking about is the encouragement that he wants to give them. So he wants to have some fruit there in Rome. He'd already had a lot of fruit among the Gentiles. And yes, he had been converting some of them, but he'd also, remember, after he made the first missionary journey, he and Barnabas decided to go back and see the churches again. Okay? So, I think we've kind of missed the point here. He didn't really want to have fruit among the people that he was writing to, in that he wanted to convert them, because they were going to give him the same fruit he was going to give them. So there, if you say he wanted to convert them, then they had to convert him too. Okay? So I think we kind of take this a little bit out of context, and we forget who Paul was writing to. Okay? So let's look at some other passages. The next one that I want to look at is Proverbs 11 at verse 30. This is a passage that we often use when we talk about talking to other people about God. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. He who is wise win souls. So, who is this statement made to? It's Old Testament.
It got to be the Jews.
Yeah, this would be the Jews. Were the Jews supposed to go out and make disciples? There were Gentiles, there were proselytes who came and wanted to be associated with the Jewish nation, but primarily that was not their role. They didn't do personal evangelism. Okay? They lived among their neighbors, and I have no doubt if their neighbors asked them why they lived the way they did, they explained to them, we have a special God. Okay? But that wasn't their task, to go out and make disciples. And I will just mention at this point that when we were living in Spokane, I got to be very good friends with Rabbi Jack, who was a Jewish rabbi. And we have a lot of really good conversations. Rabbi Jack said, we don't try to convert other people to Judaism. We try to live Judaism, and if they want to become proselytes, we'll help them, but we don't really go out of our way to convert other people.
That's probably a good thing.
Well, that was... Yeah, in a way, that's a good thing. But Rabbi Jack is in the very Orthodox Jewish mold, and we had a lot of conversations about Jesus, about the Messiah, and so I think he was telling me the truth. They really don't go out to convert other people, and the Jews really didn't try to convert other people. That wasn't their task. Their task was to prepare the way for the Messiah. to be the Messiah's personal, to be the Messiah's personal harbinger. The Gentiles had a way to worship God too. It was different than what the Jews had. I don't know what it was because it's not written down for us. But I know that Gentiles worshiped God. Then they didn't necessarily become Jews in order to do it. Okay? Some of them did, but many of them didn't. They never became proselytes. So, again, I think the thought is a good one. And I think that's true, and it could be applied to us, but that's not who the statement was made to. This is a statement that was made to the Gentiles, or to the Jews. Now, let me tell you where I think the statement is made to us. And this is important. It's just as important as talking about where it's not made to us. We have to see where it is made to us. And if we're going to talk about personal evangelism as bearing fruit for God, it's 2 Timothy 2 at verse 12. This is where Paul tells Timothy, who's not an apostle, he's not one of the 11, okay? He apparently never had these abilities that the apostles did. He's just a preacher. And Paul says, the things that you heard from me, I'm an apostle, I was given this commandment, so the things you heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust this to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So, Paul tells Timothy, you preach the gospel. That was him personally. And he says, I also want you to tell other people to continue this work. So this is the place where I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing today. Now, it's not like Timothy taught me, but
right.
Timothy entrusted it to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And as long as I consider myself a faithful man, this is my job, to teach others also. Comments. Anybody at home? So, again, you know, I know why we've picked up the statements from Matthew, from Mark, the statement that the Apostle Paul made. I know why we picked those things up. Because if he had imparted this to Timothy, and I'm a faithful man, and my job is to teach others also, I know why we go back and pick up what Paul would have said to Timothy and say that. But we just need to be careful. Otherwise, we get hung up in the snake handling and all of that other stuff that goes with the Great Commission in Mark 16. Any questions? Any other thoughts?
Thank
you. It's a little bit different than the way that it's presented generally. Mm-hmm. I know that. I spent a lot of time reading through the presentations of other people about evangelism and how that's a responsibility that we have to bear fruit for God. Not a one of them went to 2 Timothy 2 at verse 12. Every one of them went to the giving of the Great Commission and Romans, the first chapter. And I think they're missing the point. They get the idea that they're presenting is correct, but it's the wrong verse to prove it. It's a wrong conversation to prove that I have that responsibility. Okay? And I'm a real stickler on being careful about how we read the Bible, how we use the Bible. And if we're not careful, we create a lot of problems for ourselves with the way that we read it, because then we have to deal with a lot of things that we shouldn't have to deal with, because we're taking something out of context. And if you do that, it won't work. Okay.
But I talk to a lot of people that do take it out of context.
Well,
not just those verses.
They take it out of context. And I know why they do it. They want to find, you know, how do you know you're supposed to teach people to be baptized? Well, Mark 16, 15 and 16 says, go and teach all nations to be baptized. That's what I do. Well, but that's not a statement that was made to you. Why do I do it? Because 2 Timothy 2:12 says to do it. Okay.